Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking today to our regular guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. With us from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, our director, Michael Dombeck. Michael, great to have you back.
Oh, thanks, Larry. Glad to be here.
With us as well, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor, Michelle Reinen. And Michelle, it's always great to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
So as we visit with them, I hope you'll join in. We'll talk about what you should know about the latest scams and, of course, answer your questions. Maybe you have a consumer concern or question. I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. You know, I was looking at your article about the cost of consumer fraud for elderly people, and it's kind of staggering. Talk about some of that, Michael.
It is staggering, and unfortunately, those numbers continue to rise. And what we're looking at is we want to focus on really the impact as we recognize Elder Abuse Awareness Month and how these scams are targeting the elderly groups. And some of those numbers, just to kind of illustrate where that harm's taking place, our median groups, or the median loss for our age groups of 50 to 59, is about $552. But when you look at the groups of age 70 to 79, that number jumps to $1,000. And those 80 plus, that median loss is $1,674, three times the amount of the 50 to 59. So you can see as it goes up, that median loss gets larger and larger.
Yeah. So what are some of the specific scams that commonly target older consumers? Michelle, do you want to chime in for a minute?
Oh, sure. I don't think any of these will be too surprising to your listeners in that we've covered so many of them over the years. And Social Security and Medicare scams, and this is when that scammer pretends to be from the government to try and obtain the Social Security number or even money from the consumer. And typically it happens by phone call. We see sweepstakes scams, and that's when you're going to receive that call or maybe an email indicating that you've won this major prize. Again, for consumers, if you haven't entered, you're not going to win, so try not to fall for that one. But they entice you with these winnings, and then, of course, there's all these reasons why you need to make a payment in order to receive the winnings. We've seen over the years tech support scams, and they still hang around. They don't spike in the same way recently as some of the other ones, but the Microsoft, the Apple, even the Google is calling you, if you will, to let you know that you have a tech problem, that there's a virus on your computer. And if you just make payment and give access to the person on the phone in that moment in time, they can solve all these problems. And the other way this one comes is through a pop-up on your computer as well. So another way that they're trying to reach you. Certainly romance scams, where you find that love interest online, but really it's just a scammer who is trying to lead you on and move you to a new platform and ask for money repeatedly in order to meet. And they have all sorts of reasons why they can't meet that require a payment of money to help them out. And it's worth noting on this one that nearly 70,000 people reported a romance scam to the Federal Trade Commission in 2022. And those losses were $1.3 billion. $1 billion. So that's an average of 4,400 loss per person. And then another one that's really important to mention and get out there is the grandparent imposter scam. And I saved this for last because it's had a very recent new twist to it. This is when you receive that phone call and you think it's from a relative, usually the grandchild. They are having some kind of problem. They have trouble that needs money. It could be that they are in legal trouble. They are in medical trouble. They are in law enforcement trouble type situation in jail, but they need money and they want you to keep it a secret. So we really encourage people to hang up. Our message over the years has been to create kind of a family password that should there really be a legitimate emergency, you can verify, and to always verify by hanging up and calling the family member directly versus what's on the phone call. But this new twist, why this is so important to talk about today, is that artificial intelligence, scammers are using this now to take voice captures from people's social media accounts, whether it be YouTube videos or other postings that are out there, and put together these voice audio clips and create that cloned voice to have a conversation with the individual so it sounds like, it acts like the actual grandchild. And it's really hard to distinguish that it's not really the person you think it is, except for when you get to the reasons why they need money and how you're going to be asked to transmit the money during the situation. So a new twist that creates even more scare tactics with this that we want to make sure everyone's aware of.
Are we seeing that more often, that new twist? Is it showing up more?
Yeah, Michael, certainly his staff are receiving reports of this. We've seen a number of national reports as well that this is legitimately happening in many different forms, not always just to our seniors, but to the parents as well, where this voice cloning is happening.
Oh, boy. Well, June is also Internet Safety Month, and maybe we can talk some more about Internet safety kinds of scams. Michael, do you want to join in?
You bet. And we use Internet Safety Month as a time to remind everyone of some little things they should be aware of and some behavior and safety practices they can do to make sure they're protected, regardless of who they are. So the best thing is to educate yourself so you understand what you should be looking for and what some different tricks and tools you can do to prevent yourself from being a victim or some of those problems before they even happen. One of the first things you want to do is understand what some of these terms are and what happens when they take place. One of those is malware, which is a kind of a hybrid of two words of malicious software. And it's really a computer virus. What happens is that virus gets downloaded onto a device, whether it be your computer at home, computer at work, your phone. And what happens is they steal your files, or sometimes it even gives control to that criminal of device, so then they can start digging around looking for whatever you have saved. You know, this is really dangerous because in today's age, when we carry around our phone, most of our information that has everything that's private is on that phone, whether it be pictures, banking information, private things we want to save to use, whether it be accounts for shopping, things like that. So that becoming compromised can create a huge risk. Another one is called phishing, and this is phishing with a PH. This isn't bobbers and worms. And phishing is what happens is someone tries to trick you into giving them your information, such as logon information, account details, bank account numbers, things like that. And oftentimes they're presenting themselves as either a known friend, somebody, a coworker, or a different company you might be doing business with. And what they're doing is they're impersonating and taking advantage of that relationship and that trust that you have to get you to give them information that they're looking for that would potentially compromise you. Now, you can look for certain things that will stick out, such as typos or odd phrasing in messages, things that don't read right or look right because they're thrown together by someone who may not truly understand the business that you're in or the type of communications you typically have. And so you want to look for things like that and then always double check where it's coming from. What we see is that in email addresses, they'll look almost identical to a known email address, but they'll change an L to a 1 or an O to a 0. And so it looks very similar, but in reality, it's going someplace else. So little things like that, you can kind of protect yourself. And then the other tool is look at your security settings. This is a really, really important feature and element on both the device itself and your online accounts if you're creating those profiles. And those will control how your data is collected and shared. And this is really important because you want to have control of your own information and you want to control who has access to all of that and who can see what you're doing and what some of that information is. So controlling that through your security settings on those devices or accounts is a great step to keep yourself protected.
Yeah. And email, I mean, there's not a whole lot of protection with email.
Well, it is difficult, and this is where you have to really pay attention because they're going to replicate whether screens that you're used to seeing. Recently, there were a couple major scams going around that were impersonating some local credit unions. And I was even a member of one of those credit unions, and I had a hard time trying to pick out which one was the scam email, which one was the legitimate one. And so these little things that we're talking about is, what do you want to pick out? And you certainly don't want to click on any of those links or call any of those phone numbers to give away any information. You want to go to a known source. So for me, it would be going into a local branch and maybe asking, is this really an issue? Is there a problem? Or calling a phone number that I've used before that I know is trustworthy.
Yeah. Michelle Ryan and Michael Domke, our guests today, and you can join in with your questions and comments as we move along, and I hope you do. Have you been a victim of a scam or maybe a question about something relating to it? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau and Clara Neipert, our producer and on-air producers today. Trina LaSousa is our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us today as we talk with our representatives from the Division of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michael Domke as the heads of the division, and Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Questions for them, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call from Brian in Madison. Brian, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my experience with my mom was that almost right after my dad died, we started getting all these phone calls about scams. I just want to know, Medicare told me that they will never call, first of all. One of the scams that my mom fell under was that somebody claiming to be from a clinic sent her medical supplies that she doesn't need, but they said that they wouldn't charge her a thing, and they didn't, but they somehow charged Medicare. It's really sort of unfortunate because she would get calls probably every 10 minutes. What is the problem with the, law being what it is of trying to catch these people? And I'll take your comment off the air.
Okay. Michelle, you want to talk about that?
Sure. I really appreciate Brian providing information about what his mom experienced. Medicare certainly will never call. And I really am glad that that information is out there. We don't want people thinking that they are calling them. And Medicare very much wants to know when scammers are out using their information and acting as them as well. And the scam he described where his mom will be sent medical supplies free of charge, but yet they're being charged back to Medicare is certainly one that we have heard of before. And we would want a consumer complaint about that because we want to get it to Medicare. They want to know about that. There's no authorization. There's no doctor issuing these things. There's no need for those supplies. They also are calling this consumer, his mom. And if she's on the do not call list, it's still a solicitation in nature because they are offering something that is not truly free of charge because Medicare will be paying for it. And so there is that fraud aspect to things, and we want that reported in a consumer complaint. And I know his real question is, what's wrong with the laws? Well, there are a number of different laws that are in place and a number of different actions that are happening. Certainly, Wisconsin has the Do Not Call law, as well as the federal government. And those are about legitimate solicitations where a company calls and offers to sell you something. And if you're on the list, you shouldn't be receiving that call. And we definitely want you to report that. If a charity or a political individual is contacting you, those are exempt from the list. And then there's this whole group of robocallers and scammers, individuals who are just trying to steal and defraud you of your personal information and your money. And there are different pieces of law into place that require telecommunications providers to put in place authentication to verify that numbers are legitimate and are coming from a known source before they transmit those. And if not, that they're labeling those in such a way that a consumer can identify that they are a scam. And so if you have a smartphone, you may have noticed over recent years that you are seeing more labels. Instead of just unknown, you're seeing scam likely or scam call. And you're not having to have an app in order for your phone to give you that signal now. And it's because the telecommunication provider can't authenticate the source of the call. And so it's that signal for you to not pick up and not engage with that. But we want to hear about those. We certainly want to know about the solicitation so we can enforce the law. And then the final thing I'll leave you with is that the Federal Trade Commission, the Federal Communications Commission, and the Attorney Generals with Consumer Protection Departments are regularly working together to find these scammers, whether they're national or international in nature, and break them down, as well as putting and requiring new protocols, new reporting information in place. And so the scammers just keep moving ahead of some of the technologies or the laws, but efforts are constantly being made in this area. And complaint numbers have definitely gone down for 2022 as a result of a number of these laws and protocols that have been put in place. So we have seen some results from that.
And to contact you again, well, I don't think we've mentioned that, but we usually do several times during the show, and I think it's really worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. You can call the DADCAP Consumer Protection Hotline at 1-800-422-7128, or just go to the agency website where you can file a complaint or get any of our fact sheet information at datcp.wi.gov.
datcp.wi.gov. And the number again was 1-800-422-7128. Well, let's take another. Actually, Mike in Algoma called but couldn't stay with us. He says when scammers call, it used to be from a blank or a Lisa number. Now they call from the same number and in his area.
Yes, that activity has become quite commonplace and is being used to entice consumers to answer the call. And it's called spoofing. And what spoofing does is it changes the number that's displayed on your cell phone or your caller ID, and oftentimes to look like a local number. And so what happens is the consumer will pause and may think that number is somebody they actually want to talk to because it's coming from a local area, could be a business they were recently at. Maybe they made an appointment for any type of things, and we don't memorize all of those phone numbers. So what happens is it encourages them to answer that call, and then, of course, the scam is either attempted, or what also happen is sometimes they're just looking for someone who will answer the call. and they want to identify that there's a live person on that line. They're willing to answer the phone and potentially engage. And this is something that we often talk to consumers about. If they do choose to answer the call and they can recognize that it's a scam, is to immediately hang up. You know, sometimes we hear about how someone says, well, I really wasted that scammer's time and I showed them and I kept them on the line for 20 minutes. And while I understand there is some satisfaction that comes from that, they may annoyingly be putting themselves at risk, because through that conversation, they may be giving away clues or hints or even some personal information they're not aware of. These scammers are very, very clever, very sophisticated. And what also will happen is as they go through, it's telling that person on the other line, this particular consumer will engage with me. And so while they might think they'll be on the line for 20 minutes there and they're wasting time, what it's going to happen likely is they'll continue to get more and more calls, because they've identified themselves as someone who will engage and have that conversation. And so these scammers will come back at different angles, maybe with a Medicare, maybe next time it's the grandparent, next time it's a utility scam. And so it will go on and go on. The best advice we can give is just hang up.
I was thinking back to one of the times, I think you were on, Michael, that time, but Michelle was, where the person kept somebody on the line quite a while, and then the scammer got mad, and suddenly the guy finds police at his phone, at his home, because they'd called the local police department and said something about there was a problem at the particular house. You don't want that happening to you. So I think your advice is pretty darn good. Just hang up and don't deal with them. Well, let's go to Roger in Grantsburg. Roger, hi.
How you doing, Larry? How's it going today?
Great. What's on your mind?
Well, I got last year and the year before, got a lot of calls from somebody stating that they're from Amazon and that you owed X amount of money and you had to send it, or there would be actions or court actions and stuff. And it's like, whoa. I called back Amazon and I was wilder than wild. And I didn't use no action words, but I almost did. But they said, no, we would never send you, we'd never call you and tell you that you owe money. And if you did owe money, you'd get a different, you know, a whole different way of communication.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Roger. You probably have heard that story before, Michelle, or one like it.
Yeah, absolutely. The Amazon imposter call was a national leader for a very long time in trying to trick individuals into making that payment that Roger talked about, or going in and handing over your personal information to access your Amazon account because of the verification stage that they wanted to do. So he described it nicely. and he did what we'd want people to do, is if you at all question it, you hang up and you use your other contact information. You don't engage with the message by calling back. You don't engage. I mean, could you imagine if Amazon started making phone calls? I mean, think about how many vehicles you have in your neighborhood doing deliveries. Now imagine how many people they'd need to just be making phone calls to do collections or verifications or payments and things. They definitely have a different method of contacting you. And even when you get an email from Amazon and they're asking you to verify something about your account, don't engage with that, because it could be a phishing email. Go log into your Amazon account. You're going to get the, okay, we need you to update your password, we've had this problem. You're going to have a message from them in your account. So go through the regular process. Don't be communicating. Or they're going to send you an email saying, we have a financial problem here. Now log into your account. You know, don't use the links in the email, because you never know when those are legitimate emails or not, but you're going to be able to direct message from your account.
Taking a look at consumer protection issues, and you can join in the show. Love to hear from you. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, Or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, just as Amazon isn't going to call you, you're not going to get calls from the government either. Or, well, you might, but they might not be the government. They might not be the police force.
You won't. And this is something we've seen happening for about the past year, and it spikes in certain areas. And recently we saw it here in Dane County. And what will happen is they're impersonating a law enforcement officer. And one of two things, the first is they want you to verify your information because they have an arrest warrant for you. And they say, hey, before we send a squad out to come knock on your door and maybe pick you up, can you please verify your name, your birthday, and your social security number? Well, of course, this instills an immediate sense of panic. And everyone starts thinking, how could I possibly have a warrant and what would it be for? They want to make sure that they recognize it's not them, so the squad doesn't show up and the neighbors start asking what's going on. And so you instinctively want to maybe give that information. The other angle of that is they say, we have a warrant for your arrest. We're going to come out and get you. But beforehand, you can go ahead and pay for it over the phone, and then we won't send them out. Well, again, that immediate sense of panic. And if it's an amount that maybe you think, hey, it's worth taking that risk because potentially I forgot to pay a speeding ticket or whatever it might be, and then they'll go ahead and make those payments. The key here to remember is law enforcement is never going to call you and give you a heads up that they're on their way to pick you up on a warrant. They're just going to show up.
Yeah, if they want to pick you up, they're not going to call you in advance and say, I'm coming to get you.
Correct.
Gail in Madison, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Yeah. For the last couple of weeks, I have been getting 6 to 10 calls per weekday from 608-230-something-something-something-something. Is there a way to block a whole exchange?
Well, what is the phone type that you're receiving the calls from? I mean, if it's a smartphone device, you can block a number. If it's a traditional landline, you're going to have to talk to your telecommunications provider about that.
Yeah. It is an Android, but yeah, I know I can block a number, but do I have to block 608-230-0001-0002-0003, et cetera? Because the last four digits vary, and they're from Medicare. No, they're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are going to have to do that one by one. And unless another caller out there, another listener has some other kind of tech advice or there's something out there, since we're not the exact tech experts. But as far as my knowledge goes, you'd need to do that. Now, the other option is talking to your provider to see if they can do anything behind the scenes with you reporting that this is a scam call because of the authentication protocols that they need to do, or looking into an app, because there are still a number of apps out there that use the information received from the Federal Trade Commission, which we are a contributor with our complaints, to create the blacklists. And then those apps update with the blacklist information and create call blocking or at least notifications through those apps. So that could be another option with that. But again, it does involve you having to take some individual steps.
Yeah, unfortunately, Gail. Thank you for calling. Jim and Stevens Point, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I was wondering how people are able to insert themselves in a Facebook private conversation. So if I have a conversation going and my friends are responding, all of a sudden I'll get a hi something or other and let's be friends. And I'm just wondering how they're able to do that, because it's obviously some kind of a scam.
Michael, any idea on that?
I'm not a Facebook expert, so I can't explain how that particular scenario would happen. I know we've seen recently, as we talked about earlier with the advent of AI, many of these platforms are now using AI to offer certain types of assistance, and those are being promoted in a profile. But we also have seen how bots are really inundating these different platforms in an attempt to lure someone into a conversation, very similar to what Jim just said about how it's an introduction. This is who I am. This is what I want to do. The challenge with that is trying to figure out whether a friend or somebody who you've befriended on that platform, maybe their account was compromised. And through that, then all of a sudden these contacts start coming through. Another version is these bots just saturate all of these different conversations. Now, how they get inserted into maybe a private conversation, I don't have the details on how that'll happen, but it's not uncommon for us to see these strange encounters just suddenly show up.
Jim, thank you. Go ahead, Michelle.
If I can suggest as well, just be sure you're reporting this to Facebook and make sure that they have awareness that this is happening to you through their report mechanisms. So if they need to look at either one of those accounts individually or increase their own privacy settings and security settings, and then you could also evaluate your own privacy and security settings for your account to be sure that, as Michael indicated, you have things locked down related to your privacy as you are comfortable with, to be sure that those that isn't any contributing factor to how this is happening.
There you go, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Tom and Nina, we go to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a seasoned global traveler, and I've been traveling globally for more than 20 years. In a recent trip, just returned from the UK, I had trouble with two credit cards. These are RFID, you know, tap credit cards, and in a period of a week, both credit cards were compromised. And the solution, you know, is when you get a compromised card, the credit card company will send you new ones at home. Well, we weren't at home. So the credit card company, a major one, changed the authorization on the card such that they disabled the tap function and only required us to insert the credit card into a credit card reader. And under those conditions, we were then able to continue to use the credit card. Now, my main question is, how secure are these credit cards now that have RFID capability for tapping and they don't require a, you know, signing off or a signature?
That may be a tough question to answer. Michelle, any comment on?
I can't speak to the percentage and level of security. So during the conversion from traditional swipe cards, where we had skimmers reading card numbers and creating problems that way, we moved to, as a nation, chip and pin. And the UK was ahead of us in that, the European Union. And that created additional security. And then we've seen in recent years where they do move to the tap feature, where they're just reading the chip remotely, where you're not needing the PIN aspect of it. There are readers out there as well. So there are clone readers that can grab the info off the chip. That's why we do see offerings for different credit card sleeves type to kind of protect that reader from happening should someone be doing that. It's as I understand it, very rare, but it can happen. And so I think that's good that the credit card company had an alternative for you. Usually it's going to be the insert chip and PIN because you need the two pieces of information for your card still. And you can't be creating images of your card like you could in the days of skimming that still exist when people are still swiping the card type situation. When you still have old technology here in the U.S. that creates liabilities for retailers if they haven't advanced their products. So, it's good to have awareness of this and take precautions and protections, but also to make sure this is an opportunity that you have alerts in place with your credit card company so you can be made aware of suspicious activity. You can put fraud alerts on, you can be notified of activity. directly with your credit card company, and they've really ramped up over the years their security side of the companies. So, you know, great. I'm glad he brought that to our attention to have that conversation again, because it's been a while.
Tom, thank you very much again for calling. Cassandra and Kiwani, we go to you next. Hi, Cassandra.
Hi there. I just wanted to comment on two of the topics and kind of tie them together. Artificial intelligence and engaging with these fraudulent solicitors. One thing that we've heard a lot of on the news lately is how the scammers are taking artificial intelligence, making recordings for voice that can simulate an individual's voice and even fool voice recognition software and applications like that. And with that in mind, it's an even better reason to follow the advice that was already given in the show not to engage. That's just another good reason to avoid any kind of conversation, because your voice could be being recorded for those voice recognition and artificial intelligence mechanisms to commit more fraud.
Yeah. Cassandra, thanks. And I, Michael, I'm sure you're in full agreement.
I absolutely am. And, you know, with artificial intelligence, not only is it going to bring to light the scam that we're talking about, how they're cloning voices, but historically in a few of these scams, you needed a live person to make them happen, to perpetrate these scams and to engage in that conversation. Well, with the advent of AI and this ability to really manipulate those conversations through computers and choose that path, it's possible that you won't even need the live person anymore, that they can clone the voice, use the computer software, and perpetrate a lot of these scams. And so it's, you know, it's kind of an unknown area why you see a lot of these leaders in AI saying, let's take a second and think about what we're doing and make sure we have a grasp on it. But as Michelle mentioned earlier, anytime you have a situation where there's an opportunity for scammers to exploit it, we're going to see that. And this may be another one.
Thanks again for that call, Cassandra. Appreciate it very much. Our guest today, Michelle Reinen, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor within the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michael Domke, who is the Division Director for the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us. And some open lines you can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of consumer protection issues on the show today with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Michael Domke from the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Good to have them with us today. And let's take another call. Bruce and Holman, we go to you. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for calling.
Yes. The other day, there was a short feature on the news about a woman who had lost her entire life savings, $160,000. And she had received a phone call from her bank. At least that's what showed up on the caller ID. And they asked if she had made a certain purchase. Well, she hadn't. And they said, well, we'll get back to you. We have to investigate. They called back a few minutes later, and they said, yes, that was fraudulent, and we're going to send you a new credit card, but we need to do double authentication. And what they did is they read her a series of numbers and asked her to repeat that same series of numbers. Now, they weren't her account numbers. They were just random numbers. And they said, thank you. And then a few minutes later, they called back again and did the same thing, said to double authenticate her identity. They would read her a set of numbers, and she would repeat the numbers to them, and that would enable them to send out a new credit card. Well, time went by. The credit card never showed up. She got suspicious and went to the actual physical branch of her bank. And the manager sat her down and said, well, I'm sorry to tell you, it's all gone. All your money is gone. It was sent out in the three separate wire transfers. And Well, the saddest thing is that the bank won't reimburse her anything because they said, well, she should have, you know, been aware of things. And so that's it. But what the heck is double authentication? And how could that enable them to get their hands on her account?
I don't know if we should say exactly how to do that on the air, Michelle.
Yeah, good point, Larry. We don't want to give away those kinds of secrets. So double authentication as it would relate to an email account is going to be your password and then what we refer to as usually multi-factor authentication where you receive something. So you set it up to where you either have a keylogger or you're going to get a PIN number texted to a regular contact, or you have an app that's going to pop up a PIN number that you have to enter. So two pieces of information that are going to verify that you really are the person to be logging in and taking action. In this case, you know, Michael may certainly have more to add here and contribute, but what I want to leave people with is that when you get a phone call asking you to verify or authenticate, even if they try and continue a scam with multiple calls and saying, you know, let's verify, did you make this transaction? No, okay, we're going to call you back and check into things. We never want consumers to engage and hand over information, and that could be even repeating what you're asked to provide, because they can be capturing that voice clone information that could have been the wire transfer money, some account number that they've gotten through identity theft. And they could just have been making up the story to get her to provide the information in a voice clone. But if you ever get a call that says, did you do this transaction? And no, you didn't. And then, okay, we're going to take steps. You need to hang up. Do not engage. And then you call your credit card company using the number on the back of your credit card. You make the contact. We don't want people responding to random calls, unsolicited calls, calls asking you to verify, authenticate, hand over information. I mean, there are certainly credit card companies that call and say, did you just make a purchase in Germany? Nope. And you know, it's your credit card company, but then you stop there and now you call the fraud department, or they may say, okay, please contact our fraud department. Use the number on the back of your card. Well, you know, they don't want you engaging with people calling you randomly either. So I pause here. If Michael knows anything more on the double authentication.
Not necessarily on, I think you summed it up and explained it perfectly. One thing I would say is that we have seen a different variation of this double authentication type of scam, and usually with payment apps. And oftentimes when we see a scam being perpetrated to sell, let's just say Green Bay Packer tickets, and then they'll say, we're using this particular payment method. I'm going to send you a PIN, send me whatever that PIN is, or this payment app's going to send you a PIN, send me what that is so I can make sure that this goes through, because they're alleging that's the verification, when in reality they're doing something very similar to what was just explained and how they want to get that information from that user. And the probably the simplest advice we always try to give consumers is certainly hang up. And after that, if you think there is, or someone's asking you to verify the information, you know, ask them, what do you have? And that puts the onus to understand if they can able to provide that information to you. Now, you may want to pause whether you verify that's correct, if it is or not, but it's a different mechanism to stop them, to put the responsibility back on them to make that verification. So we have seen that type of scam before, certainly not to this level of loss, which is very, very unfortunate.
Yeah,
we're always going to see the twist.
It is indeed. Bruce, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Tom in La Crosse will give you a chance. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. Good day. I guess I have a solution that I use for avoiding spam or scam or calls that I receive is, if I don't recognize the number, I'm not going to answer. And if it's someone I know and they really want to contact me, they're going to leave a message. If they don't leave a message, well, then I know it wasn't legit. So maybe it's a little simple, but, you know, it works for me.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful. I mean, and those that are in your contact list that are legitimate, you know, you're going to recognize that call to answer it as well.
Good points, Tom. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Alice in Eau Claire. Hi, Alice.
Hello. I'm calling with a suggestion for the woman who is getting like 6 calls a day from a certain agency, but the phone number was different. I contacted the National Do Not Call list and reported the messages to them. I found that in each of the calls, they used the same number for callback. And so I reported that number along with the name of, they gave senior aid helper insurance and national disability insurance was what they were trying to sell me. But it took a couple of weeks, but finally the phone calls ceased, and I tend to believe that the National Do Not Call Registry was what helped me get rid of those things.
Michael?
I would take this opportunity first to thank Alice for reporting those. That is absolutely what we want to happen, both to the Federal Trade Commission, but also to report those phone numbers to us here at the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And you can do that by calling our hotline or by reporting them directly, you know, with us online. What we want to do is we mentioned that because it only takes one of these reports or complaints for us to follow up and really start doing some backtracking to try and stop these calls from coming in, not just to that particular consumer, but to everyone. You know, we regularly investigate calls that will come in and try and figure out who's behind them, what's being perpetrated, so that other people aren't victimized. But we can only do that when those numbers are reported to us. So this is my little plug to try and make sure that people like Alice and everyone else, please make sure you report them to us and give us an opportunity to help.
And the number to report is 1-800-422-7128. 1-800-422-7128. Or you can go to datcp.wi.gov and do it online as well. Alice, thank you again. Appreciate it very much. Daryl in Menominee Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Daryl.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on a recent call that your hostess received about a person that lost her life savings from a call of double identity. And she called, and he suggested that he seemed to put it in a credit card scenario, but it was actually what the original caller said is that she lost her life savings. It wasn't a credit card scenario.
So it was a bank scenario.
It was an issue with a bank, not a credit card company. So I just wanted to question or clarify what that would be a different scenario entirely. Call the branch right away and say, what's going on with my money? Is it still intact?
Yeah.
Yeah, Daryl's absolutely correct, and I apologize if I added any confusion there. I guess the purpose of me explaining that credit card example was a different variation of the double authentication scams that are taking place. Daryl's absolutely correct that if you have a scenario where it's your direct bank who's being victimized and you are having that money withdrawn, certainly you want to deal with them directly. And as Michelle pointed out, that double authentication can be used in those scenarios to either get a particular PIN, that code number, or even to get the voice recorded so that you can use a voice verification of that security number to withdraw that money or send it out. So sorry for that, you know, kind of conflating those two issues, but just showing that this type of scam takes place across different platforms.
Thanks, Daryl. Appreciate it. Lisa in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. Hey, I just wanted to know if there's any classes that will help young and old through this these kind of scenarios and stuff, because there is a lot of lawlessness online, and
yeah.
I'm clueless.
Yeah.
Well.
I will start since in a couple of different areas. First, we have a consumer guide online, which is a great tutorial that can be used for all ages. And you can download that, or you can call the office and get a copy sent to you or copies sent to you. The other thing that we have is we have staff out in the field that are giving presentations in the communities regularly as requested. So you can make a request, or you can attend one that's already publicly available at libraries, ADRCs, some retirement groups, schools, all over. And that information is posted on our social media sites. There's stories that run that highlight some of them a couple weeks in advance, or even days in advance, so you can get out there. And then we're at booths at different community events. You know, Juneteenth is coming up, so we'll be in Milwaukee and Madison at those celebrations and things. So certainly lots of opportunities that we can enhance. Just check out our website.
And we will take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about consumer issues with our guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. With us from the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection are Michael Domke and Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor Michelle Reinen. So, do you need some advice, or maybe you've had an experience to share? You think you might have been scammed? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Mark in Wisconsin Rapids, we go to you next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I think you're really talking to Mark in Wisconsin Dells. But anyway, Larry, this is a consumer alert. I recently learned about a banking phenomenon called the automatic update. And I learned about it from my banker service lady.
The automated updating system.
Yeah, automatic updater system.
Okay.
And here's what it is. I had a charge against my credit card, which I got rid of by calling a phone number that was associated with it. But I wondered, how the heck did they find my credit card number and charge to it? And I thought, it had to come from my bank. So I called my bank. And the lady said, yeah. She said, we gave them the number. And she said, this is how it works. She said, I never knew about this till I worked here. It's called the automatic updater system. So if you had a credit card with Bank A 20 years ago and did business with a magazine like Reader's Digest, which is what my case was, those people can automatically find your new bank and your new credit card number, as long as it's a Visa card, and then make charges against it without your knowledge. And if you don't find those little charges hidden amongst the others, you're out the money.
Hmm. That's one I hadn't heard. Michael, a comment on that?
I have not. I'm not familiar with this system or this program with the banking industry either. One thing I can say is if you suddenly discover new charges on your credit card bills or being deducted from your bank accounts, certainly let us know. You can file a complaint. We do assist with billing disputes and try and work those out between any businesses or lending institutions where things may not have gone as they were supposed to. But in regards to this particular scenario that Mark has described, this is new to me.
Yeah. Mark, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Brad in Hatfield, your turn. Hi, Brad.
Hi. I get faxes, and what it says to unsubscribe is I can call a phone number or go to a website and enter my phone number. My concern is if I do that, I'm just verifying that my phone number is valid. Is that a concern, or are there regulations if you go to an unsubscribe site, they can be in trouble if they use it for nefarious purposes?
Michelle?
It's probably going to depend if it's legitimate. And I'm laughing only because that can be so hard to decipher. So, I mean, you're talking about faxes. Do you know where they're really coming from? Are they a legitimate company and source? And then you could contact them. You should be able to go search for that, if it's legitimate, that website yourself and find a place to report or unsubscribe. And certainly the Wisconsin has some unsolicited fax regulations in place. So if you've requested not to receive these, you could file a complaint as well. And Consumer Protection can take a look at that. But if it's just a scammer trying to get contact with you, you're right. You could be validating information and legitimacy. So same as with emails, if you haven't engaged with the company before and you're all of a sudden getting these random emails and you hit unsubscribe, are you really clicking a link that has something malicious behind it? So it's all in those precautions and evaluation piece of it. I'm sorry we don't have anything better for you on that.
Yeah, Brad, thank you for calling. Joanne in Neshkoro, we go to you next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I have two suggestions. If I get one of these, oh, hi, Grandma, I need your help so fast, so bad, I'm in trouble, I say, okay, but what's your sister's name? Well, they hang up because they don't, you know. And then the other one is, if I do have a scam call that gets past my caller ID as soon as I realize that, I just grab the dog whistle I have laying beside the telephone and give them a blast on that, and they won't call back either.
All right. Still not exactly the way you guys would handle it, is it, Michelle?
Well, my concern with the what's your sister's name is, one, if there really is a sister, is that out there on social media? And so the scammer could get that, especially now that they're advancing in their use of technology. Now, if there is no sister and that's your trick, okay, but you're engaging, and knowing that you'll engage means they could contact you again because maybe they'll get you to engage in another way. So we prefer, and the message we give is just hang up and verify other ways. And yeah, the dog whistle, that'll hurt some eardrums, certainly if they're live people behind it. So at least that's not really any kind of engagement. So, and it probably brings you a little bit of satisfaction blowing that whistle too.
Joanne, thanks. Buck in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi.
Hey, guys. A couple of things here. I'd like to give a plug to the banks. My wife works for a local bank. And, you know, sometimes they have floaters that go from one branch to the other. And people always, a lot of times, get upset when they're asked for their ID. And they go, well, I've banked here for 30 years or whatever. And, you know, they're just trying to protect the consumer. And I hear all the horror stories from my wife. And cut them a little slack. They're there helping you. And the second thing is, she's actually had people come in with their phone in their pocket while on the phone with a scammer telling them to transfer money. And they get these people believing that they're going to be in trouble if they don't do something. And they say, no, we're not getting off the phone. Go to your bank. We'll stay on the phone with you. And they try to get them to process or transfer money or do something. So, you know, the banks are truly, I believe, doing everything they can to help the consumer. But you got to be smarter, and you can't fight your banker when they say, can I see your ID?
Oh.
You know, Larry, it's not uncommon for the scenario that Mark described where they're keeping them on the line. And they do that intentionally to, one, continue to reinforce that particular scam or the legitimacy, but more importantly, it prevents them from taking a minute to think about what's going on, talk to somebody else, verify that scenario, maybe even just stop what they want them to do altogether. But by maintaining that continuous contact, it helps them perpetrate that scam. We also hear about how they say, stay on the phone until we have somebody stop by your house to pick up the money, or stay on the phone while they go to a local ATM and withdraw the money or deposit it. It's a common tactic used to prevent that.
We have Dave in Shorewood emailed to ask that besides setting up a family password, what else could be done to help older family members deal with and recognize scam calls? Are there print resources available? And Michelle, I think you addressed this, but it's worth addressing again.
Absolutely. We do have the Consumer Guide, which is a great publication, and it's a booklet, so it can sit by the phone or the computer to provide reassurance that these things are scams. So you can call the Consumer Protection Hotline to have one mailed to you or download it on a tablet so it's with you wherever you go. And then we have tons of fact sheets that will also help. And one other thing that you can do that comes to mind for me is communicate. You know, when you're about to take a family vacation and a family member will stay behind, make sure you're letting them know, you know, where you're going, how they can get a hold of you if cell phone devices aren't going to work, should there be a trouble, you know, what you're going to use. Yes, there's the family password or passphrase if you want. Something that's not on social media that won't be communicated and easily accessed by scammers. But also maybe do a phone call check-in, you know, every couple days if you can during your trip. So there is open communication. And something else that some experts that we've interacted with are making sure that there's a phone call every day, not saying, oh, who'd you talk to? Da, da, da. How'd your day go? You know, anyone give you a call? Because you want to, with your older family members, still allow them to have freedom and confidence and not feel like they're being subjected to scrutiny and decision-making, because these scammers are talented and they are using skills to try and deceive people. So we want to make sure that we're not doing any blaming because they're just so skilled. But let me leave you with the 800 number so you can get the booklet. 1-800-422-7128, or go to that website and download it, datcp.wi.gov.
A listener emailed that a family member was using Craigslist to search for an apartment in Minnesota. The rental company is legitimate with headquarters in California. The scammer was using the CEO's name, which is legitimate. The apartment building is legitimate. And as in St. Paul, because of some urgency to relocate, he wired $5,000 to the scammer and later found out it was a scam. After calling the rental company, he found out from them that this has been an issue for them. Is there anything else that can be done to recoup the money? Are there steps that he should take to inform agencies of the fraud?
He certainly can file a complaint with us here at datcp.wi.gov and give us the opportunity to look into exactly how that was promoted, the communications back and forth. And then what we do is we attempt to try and do exactly what's being asked, recoup that money, and also bring awareness. You know, if we receive one complaint, oftentimes there isn't just one victim. There's more than one victim. And then we want to try and make sure we can find and identify and contact those victims to see if there's a situation that we can assist them with as well. So it all starts with filing a complaint here. And the scam that he mentioned is not one that is new to us. These realty scams are certainly something that's been around for a long time. As we see with the internet, so many of these properties are listed online. And so it's easy to grab them off of the variety of sites and create your own posting. One recommendation I make is, if you see a property on Craigslist and you're interested in it, you know, do a reverse search on, go through Google, look for that address, look for a particular company who might be promoting that, contact them directly. Certainly don't be wiring money through that contact that you only found on Craigslist.
Mm-hmm. And as long as we're talking about moving, summer is also a time for moving households. And how do you find a legitimate mover, Michelle?
Oh, friends and family member and neighbors are going to be a great resource for you if you are thinking of moving. Someone that you see moving into the neighborhood, just go up and ask how they feel about the movers if they hired somebody. That also is going to help. But we want people to go get a resource as well from the federal government. It's from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration called Your Rights and Responsibilities When You Move and Ready to Move. You can get that at protectyourmove.gov. And what this booklet and brochure will give you is your rights as a consumer with moving companies, because they're required by federal law to provide you with this booklet and brochure. But before you hire somebody, go get it. Know what it says so you can make some choices. What we see in this area with some movers are those fraudsters that are requiring a deposit and then never show up to the move. Some that load your belongings into a truck and disappear, stealing everything. Cool. And others that are offering low estimates before moving, maybe during that phone call to make that reservation. But then they're significantly raising the price and refusing to unload belongings until you make payment. So you really want to protect yourself by getting things in writing, not signing blank documents. You know, with that in writing, go beyond the verbal. You're going to have the conversation, you're going to do the estimate and say, oh, I have a one bedroom apartment. Well, what does that really look like? You know, how much stuff? But if you get it in writing now, if they, you know, show up and say, oh, this looks like a three bedroom apartment, you have some things to back up that conversation. But then never make a payment in advance, that large payment or that full payment. You'll likely have to put down a deposit, but if they're asking for big money up front, that should be a red flag that you need to move away from this mover, if you will. And then when they come to your property to start loading things, be suspicious if it's a rented truck. There are some legitimate reasons why that could happen. Things break down, repairs, they're honoring their contracts. But they should be able to easily explain. You should be able to validate that information if they show up in a rented truck and are just kind of don't have a legitimate backed up story. That is also something to be concerned with. And when selecting that mover, if you're looking online, look for a legitimate address that truly exists for the company, registration and insurance information. And if you can't get that off their website, that is something to be suspicious about.
I just got back from a trip to Canada, so it's on my mind. But what advice do you have about renting vacation lodging?
Well, the first thing I can tell you is make sure that you please use a trusted site. You know, as we've seen the expansion of vacation rental industry explode, we want to make sure that consumers are doing the research and going through a trusted site. What you want to do is you want to look at that and you want to verify, you know, what are the terms and conditions that their company's offering? Do they offer refunds if anything might go wrong? So making sure you understand what you're committing to and buying into. The next is read the reviews. You know, we understand that reviews can provide a lot of good insight. We've heard dialogue about how sometimes they can be skewed, but oftentimes they're going to be a great window into what that actual property has and offers along with the experience around it. So looking into those things, we suggest that you call that property, the owner, or through the site, just talk to someone and verify that it's legitimate, that somebody wasn't what we talked about earlier, stealing that posting, reposting it somewhere else. Talk to an owner who can provide some of the details about the property to make sure it is legitimate. And then also, never, if they all of a sudden change dynamic and want you to start paying through a different app or something outside the platform where you found it, that's a red flag. That may be a scam, that it's not a legitimate posting, and then may be very difficult to trace that money back. Most importantly, at the end, use a credit card. You know, in the previous discussion, we talked about with the rental scam and putting that money down. One thing we always want to discourage, if possible, is use a credit card instead of wiring money, sending cash, paying through anything else. It provides a little bit more protection, and they have those fraud detection systems in place to help make sure that you are verifying the purchases. And if something goes wrong, you can file an appeal.
Rick in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Rick.
Hi there. I hope this doesn't seem trivial compared to stolen furniture and $5,000, but over the course of time, it's really frustrating. And my question really is to DATCP, I think it is.
Yeah.
If they could do something about it short of, I'm not looking for any recompense or punishment sure. of my local food co-op, which I won't name, but it has four or five branches, constantly, and I don't mean frequently, I mean constantly overcharges at the checkout point. It's been a problem for 20 years, and they got a new computer system, and it went away for a while, but now my understanding is they are changing the prices centrally from a central location online, of course, and, you know, the store can't yep. keep up with changing the prices that are posted. And if I buy six items, one or two of them will be the wrong price. And I'm just wondering if it's something DATCP could, you know.
Could handle, sure. It may come under a different rubric, Michael.
Actually, I'm going to grab this one, Larry. Okay. The Bureau of Weights and Measures, which is part of our division, is out there with their inspectors, and they do price scanning verification. So file that complaint with us, go online and certainly file the complaint. It will get to the Bureau of Weights and Measures. An inspector will go out and do a price verification check. The city of Milwaukee has their own city sealer program, and so their own weights and measures program, and the complaint might get transferred depending upon the specific address and location that you were talking about. But definitely file a complaint so we can go out there and check things out.
Yeah. Rick, thank you very much. And again, it's 1-800-422-7128 is the number to call, Rick, or you can just go online to datcp.wi.gov. File that complaint, and they will do something to make it, to look into it, for sure. So, here we are, just about out of time, but do you have a quick word on the latest on student loan repayment?
Oh, well, it's coming. It's coming in short order, so we want to make sure that at this point in time, we believe that the repayments will have to start September 1st. And that is still up in the air based on different court settlements and rulings and things, but we want to make sure that people are standing watch to be sure that they are not defrauded by a scammer. Because this space is continuously moving, we want to be sure that people contact their service provider with questions, ask the Wisconsin Coalition on Student Debt through their Wisconsin Student Loan Help Hotline any questions that they have about their own situation. That number is 833-589-0750. So that way you aren't scammed by anyone out there trying to trick you.
Michelle, Michael, thank you both so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. We'll look forward to another visit. Thanks again.
Thanks, Larry.
Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor in the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michael Domke is the division head of the division of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. So great to have both of them with us. Tomorrow on the show, we are going to Bayfield for Bayfield in Bloom, a live program. Looking really forward to that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.